Joey, your T-ball team spirit, and buy your hard-working Art Lab team a cup of coffee, which helps fuel purchases of high-octane equipment and T-ball tech that get poured back into percolating, highly caffeinated content for you. Just go to buymeacoffee.com and search Therapy Bites.
On this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Balders, welcome back to another great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab. And in the studio today, in the Art Lab, we have John Morley for an episode called Killer Success, the psychology of a serial entrepreneur. John is a serial killer at business, that is, at business entrepreneurship. And he is an engineer, a marketing specialist, a talk show host. He's president of his local area chamber of commerce. And I look forward to talking a little bit about, because I heard some rumors that he does some NLP stuff, which is kind of his being a mind hacker extraordinaire. This coming up for you guys on the next episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Stay tuned following the interview for On the Couch and Off the Rocker, our special guest's psychosilly analysis by Art Lab's own head cabbager, Dr. Ima Freudnot.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Hey, T-Ballers, welcome to today's episode on Killer Success, the psychology of a serial entrepreneur. And in the Art Lab, as we said in the intro, is John C. Morley, serial entrepreneur, engineer, marketer, talk show host, first responder. He's interviewed people from all parts of the world, including thought leaders, innovators, celebrities, and authors. And he is a host of his own podcast called J. Moore Tech Talk Show. And today we'll be covering things such as the mechanics of self-improvement and motivation, the mechanics of success, power programming your brain for success. Yes, you can program your own brain. And how he is overcoming some hurdles and helping others overcome hurdles as well.
Stay in the stands at the end of the interview, T-Ballers, and witness our special guest slug a bite-sized brain ball with your name all over it, clean out of the Art Lab.
John, man, I've been looking forward to getting you on the show, and we have all kinds of interesting things to talk about. First of all, you had a marketing, graphic design, printing, video production company. What led to you getting into that?
Well, first, I want to say thank you very much for having me. It's a privilege and a pleasure, Dr. Heath, to be here today with you. I'll tell you that I didn't know one iota of marketing, advertising, graphic design. And so I had the largest marketing advertising company working for me when I was in college, and I had started JMore before I even graduated. And I realized about 11 years ago, roughly, I went back and I said, you know what? This isn't working. And they're making mistakes and not doing things right. And I decided to do something that most people don't want to do. They don't want to create change. So Xerox is already someone that we're a client of. And I said to Xerox, hey, how do I become a small mom and pop print shop? Because I noticed a lot of marketing companies, they do the one thing wrong. They say they market, they advertise, it's great, but they don't freaking print. How can you be in an advertising business and not print? Well, we sub it out. So I said, if I'm going to do this, I got to get into printing first. And so I called them up and I said, how do I become a mom prop print shop? They said, John, it's real simple. I said, okay, how do I do it? 100. I said, okay. Reached in my pocket. I gave them $100. No, John, we meet 100,000.
Oh my God.
Oh, you said 100. So went to my bank. Long story short, got a loan and went into basically Xerox, you know, and I purchased this machine. But here's the caveat. The machine was actually – the actual price of the machine, I think, it was $150,000. And I only got $130,000, which is what I told them. But really, I got $150,000. I used that $20,000 to put it back into resources. I even told them, hey, guys, I'm really sorry. What do I owe you for lunch or dinner? I came up short. My credit wasn't as good as I expected. I just want to pay you for lunch and dinner. Now, I knew what I was doing because they said, John, hold on. You're not going to believe this, but we are actually having a special this week on your machine, anything higher with a $20,000 rebate. I was like, oh, wow. Next thing I know, I got the machine, failed miserably for 2 years, And then I built my own print, graphics, digital design, marketing. I'm also a video producer. I produce over 600 free videos every single month, plus paid videos. And I just love doing what I do, but I live for one main reason, Dr. Heath, and that is to become a better version of myself and to help others become better versions of themselves. You know, there are going to be people in your world that are going to rain on your parade. That's fine. You know, no one has the right to rain on my parade or make me feel inferior about myself except for one person, me. Same goes for you guys. No one has the right to put a snowball, to rain on your parade, to tell you you're inadequate. So you might say, well, gee, John, what do you do if somebody says, you know, John, you're no good at that? And I say, you know, like in the beginning, I wasn't a member of the International Press Association. I wasn't known as a big writer, but now I write a lot. And so they said, John, you know, you're never going to be a writer. You're never going to make money. I said, and I just was very polite. And I said to them, I understand why you may feel that way. And you're entitled to your opinion. And there are many of the people that love the content I produce. And I wish you well. You see, you don't have to accept that. When you accept something, then it gets into your psyche, gets into your mind. And I don't know if you guys know this, but your mind is not run by your conscious. Now, I'm not going to get too deep here, but there's something called the subconscious. And let's just think about that as what's below the brain, what we're not aware of. So you might have remembered a book many years ago from L. Ron Hubbard called Dianetics. And people kind of poke fun on it. But, you know, he was on the right track. When you get injured or something happens, those memories are going here to the conscious. But when you get injured, they kind of go to the subconscious and they create an engram, he called it. Just a fancy word for a conditioning that gets stored in your brain. So let's say, you know, you were somewhere with a friend. And for whatever reason, I don't know, you're eating red licorice. All right. So you eat red licorice. But for whatever reason, you bring red licorice out and they either start to get angry or they get defensive. Now I'm making this all up. And you probably say, John, how could red licorice get somebody angry or upset, right? What could that? How could that do that? And so no one else is really, you know, bothered by it. But you take the person's side and say, look, yeah, and they may or may not know why they're getting upset. So if they do know, that's great. They might. If not, then you can go to hypnosis and you can get deep with them. But let's assume they know. Well, John, I'll tell you why I'm angry. It's not your fault. When I was only 7 years old, my friends were over and they brought red licorice. And we always got into arguments every time they had the red licorice. And I just for some reason feel that whenever I see red licorice that, you know, somebody's out to get me, like an attack me. And I said, oh, that's terrible. Now, do you all remember Pavlov and the dog?
Of course, absolutely, Pavlov. Yes.
Uh-huh. All right, so let's go to that for a quick second. So Pavlov is, you know, the scientist and his dog, and so the dog is eating this meat or this T-bone steak, right? He eats the T-bone steak, which is absolutely delicious, and he salivates, right, when he's eating the steak. We all do when we eat food. So Pavlov decided that, I wonder if I can try something. So he rang the bell. And the dog would eat the T-bone steak. He did this two or three times. Then he took the steak away. He says, I wonder if I rang the bell again, if the dog would salivate. Yes, he did. Because he created a classical conditioning. So that's what happened in my friend's situation there. So I said to them, would you like to get rid of that? Do you like, oh, I love licorice, but I just hate the way it makes me feel. I get a bad stomach ache. So it's not really something you're alert. No, it just makes my mind all crazy. Would you like to eat? Oh, I would love to eat licorice, but I can't because it always sends me into oblivion. It makes me like this disastrous person. I'm like, oh, I feel for you. So you want to get rid of that, right? Yeah. I said, okay. So I'm going to give you the analogy that I gave them. And you guys can actually use it. So one thing I tell people to do, you don't have to close your eyes now if you don't want to, but I tell people to close their eyes. They can count backwards from 10 to 1. They can get a little comfortable. Just relax. And so when you do that, the first thing I ask people to do is to point to the part of their body, could be their head, their hip, their leg, any part, that you start to feel like that licorice feeling that's really negative. And I might say, oh, gee, it's right here in my abdomen. So I'll point to them like, okay, great. Now I want you to reach in your abdomen. I want you to pull it out and I want you to look at it. What color is that? Give me a color. What does it feel like? Okay, what does it smell like? How big is it? Draw it out for me. Okay. Now, what I want you to do as I want you to take that object, that shape you took out there, and I want you to take your hands and I want you to crush it, like really, really tiny. I want you to micro crush it. And as you're crushing it, tell me if you don't feel a little better already about the situation. Like, it starts to feel better. Okay, so now what I want you to do is I want you to take that little tiny pellet, it's really so small, and I want you to put it into your cannon on the ground. Okay, put it in that cannon. And when I count backwards, okay, I'm going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. When I count one, I want you to just hit the button and see that pellet just blasting out. And within seconds, it is going to just obliviate as it goes to the sun. Are you ready? So put it in there. I'm going to press the button. When it hits 1, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Feel that all coming up, and busting all across the universe. And seconds, it's hit the sun. And now anytime that you touch, see, taste, or smell licorice in the future, you're going to think nothing but wonderful, loving thoughts. So now I ask the person to open their eyes. Now, I just made this up with licorice, but it could be anything. It was actually something else, but I preserved the innocent and the guilty here. It was actually a person.
I like red licorice.
Okay. So he had an issue with one of his family members, but I don't ever like to disclose. I'm very confidential, so I don't like to disclose the person or the matter, because even if I disclose the matter, I'm not getting his name, but I still don't want to share it, which is still legal, but I like to do something just to explain the concept. So I said to him, I'll call him Jim. That's not his name. Jim, tell me, I got a bag of licorice here. Would you like one? Yeah, I may want to try one. So let's go back and do the exercise again. Came back. I said, how do you feel now? He's like, might want to try one now. I said, let's do the exercise one more time. Come back. I said, you want to try? Yeah, give me one. Oh, they're good. How do you feel? I feel like this great feeling. I feel like I'm really like loved. Like I feel like so respected. Yeah. It's good. So now you can eat licorice the rest of your life, but don't eat too much because you'll get fat. So my point is that there are programs that are put into our brain when we're born. This is for the moment we leave the womb, okay? And you might say, John, that's nonsense. No, it's not. There are programs that are in there, and those programs are what shape you and I every single day. So when you say to people, why is you can't do something, it's not that they can't. It's that they believe they can't, which is why my slogan, which you may or may not know, it's on my hat, believemeachieve.com. Before you can achieve one little iota of anything, you have to first believe in yourself. I tell people you have to believe me, and then you'll start to believe yourself. Because people don't want to believe themselves, but they'll believe someone else first if they trust them. And so I'm like, believe me. And then when you start to taste the Kool-Aid, start to believe yourself a little bit. Like, oh, wow. This works.
Now, John, let me ask you on that point, especially for our listeners, just so everybody's clear on this. You're saying that believing in yourself in and of itself is a program that can be written, I use the word encoded into the brain itself.
Yeah. I try to use simple words for my audience, but encoded is probably correct. What I like to say is it's just stored. Right. So if you go somewhere, a perfect example is I use this one because a lot of people now, I don't speed, but I'm sure we have some speeders listening to the show. No judgment here. We're a non-judgmental show. We don't discriminate race, religion, sexual orientation, color, creed. We're non-discriminatory here. So you've been in your car. And what would happen right now if hypothetically we were to just play a cop siren right now? What would go through your mind? Well, right now, when I hear that, I take notice of it, but I'd be, okay, I guess somebody needs some assistance. Like, you know, but if somebody else heard that, what would they do? Like, oh my gosh, what'd I do wrong? Like, what happened? Why did that happen? Because you got conditioned the first time you got pulled over and it was a bad experience and you got a ticket. And these programs, like you said, getting coded, are loaded into our brain and they prevent us from being the true self and the true potential that we want to be. Our subconscious, which I'm going to say, they say it's 90. I'm going to say it's really 98%.
Oh, yeah.
It runs. I mean, it's 2%. So the subconscious is good for one thing because it runs our autonomous nervous system so that like we don't have to think about our heart beating. We don't have to think about digestion. It just works, right? We don't think about breathing. But the other thing the subconscious does is it regulates our thoughts. you remember Earl Nightingale, Conan, okay? Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, what we think about, we bring about. So what we focus on, we become, okay? So our energy, our basically we have our energy. So wherever our thoughts flow, energy is going to go. You might say, John, well, that's wacky. All right, let's think about it. If you're telling me that you're having a challenge in your life, okay, maybe you're having a relationship challenge, maybe you're having a money challenge, whatever it is, I want you just to think about how you would feel if you didn't have that challenge. I had a lady on my show, and she was in one part of the world. She wasn't even in the United States, and she was on my show just texting in the chat. And she told me, oh, John, this doesn't work for me. You don't understand. I have five kids. I'm getting tickets. I don't have money. Da, 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 da. And so I said to her, look, I'm willing to work with you. Okay. Message me offline. I'm willing to work with you, providing that you're going to take the commitments I give you. I don't even want to charge you a penny. I just want to help you to get out of the challenger. She comes to me. I tell her to focus on good things. And told her how to do this. We went through some exercises so that we could put her in a peak state. Because let's face it, things in our world trigger us. So we have to be able to get back into that peak state, right, doctor? Because if we're not in that peak state, then what's going to happen is we're not going to be the best we can be, right? We get up in the morning, we may not be in that peak state that we want to be in. So one of the things I like to do, and I write this down, I take a little sticky note, and I write down this phrase. You can write whatever you want. I write down the sticky phrase, I am wired to win. That's by my laptop.
Oh, that's great.
My
I love that. Post.
That's by my car, everywhere. So I see, I'm like, yes, I'm wired to win. And I look at subconsciously, it's by my mirror, I'm wired to win. Like it's in my blood. So this lady went these exercises. She calls me in 3 days. She said, oh, John, she said, this isn't working. I said, it's only been 3 days. So I know. She's like, but you don't understand. I got a letter. Like, I'm gonna my credit, all these problems. I got legal notices. I said, look, I understand. Yeah, obviously, let's keep focusing on. Remember, what's happening today is not happening for right this moment. It's happening because of what you thought of in the past. It's going to take time for you to change what's here. But I promise you, it will change. She's like, all right. She calls me back. Okay. So Thursday comes by. I told her to give me a week. Thursday comes by. She's like, oh, John, you don't know what's happening. They're going to take this. I'm going to lose my home. I said, all right, just take a deep breath. Just relax. We kept going to the exercises. On day, say, six, she calls me back, doctor. You know what she says?
What's that?
On day six, she calls me back. And she says, oh, my God. I said, all right, let's just take it easy. She said, no. I said, what happened? she says, you're not going to believe us. I said, okay. She says, first of all, she says, you know the rent that I've been struggling to pay? I said, yes. I remember you telling me about it. She says, my landlord wrote me a letter. I said, oh, that's okay. She says, and he said in the letter that he is going to reduce my rent to a third for as long as I want to stay there.
Oh, wow.
He knows that I'm a good person. I'm trying the best I can. And he doesn't want to cause me any pain. And he just wants to get me on my feet. He sees that I'm struggling. So that was a good thing. Second thing she said to me, because she holds five jobs now.
Oh my goodness.
And I said, how, because she's not really making ends meet. So, said, John, my first job, I actually quit. I said, oh my gosh. And the second job, I actually got fired. I said, oh boy. And the third job, I quit. I said, oh my gosh. She says, but don't worry. She says, I actually got a new job. And they actually are getting me to make triple of what I was making in all those jobs. And I love what I'm doing, what she was making in the five jobs.
Goodness gracious.
So I said to her, see, so I guess focusing on what you want and focusing on the positive helps, right? How about that car ticket? She's like, it's like, I don't know what happened, but she's like, it kind of just got dismissed. So I said, so believing isn't just something up here. Now, this is going to go over a lot of people's heads, and they're going to be like, what's he doing? He's on crack. First of all, I'm not on crack. I'm on any drugs. Have my occasional drink. I don't smoke. All right. Well, I tell that to you because I'm a sane mind. But you're going to say to me, John, you know, our universe is not made of things that are solid. Everything we have, from this remote control to my head to our bodies, they're vibrating at billions of times per second, okay? The universe is all energy. So if the universe is all energy, Doctor, that means that we can actually affect our world. If we can affect our world and our energy, and it's shown that about, I think it's about 5 to 12 feet, if you have the right kind of energy, you're going to affect that person. And so if we can affect that person, that means we can actually be a deliberate creator. Because everyone always says, you know, John, things are happening to me. They never say that I created this. But now this lady was like, oh my gosh. She's like, I was meant to find you at 11:30 one night. I said, aren't you glad you did? She says, I am so grateful. She says, my life is so amazing. She says to me, what do I owe you? I said, you don't owe me anything. I said, I told you I would help you, and I did. And she hasn't been back in a while, but I know her life has changed. And just before we got off the phone, she said to me, John, she says, you know my four grandkids. You know, one's here and three in other states I told you about. I said, yes, I remember. She says, the one is right down the street, which I always see every day. The other one that's in California is actually moving back to our neighborhood. And the two, second and third ones that are actually in Ohio, they're moving back the end of this year. So they're going to get to see grandma almost every week. I said, it sounds like you're creating a really interesting world. She's like, it's just happening. I said, no, it's not. You're creating it. You see, when you make something in life, you can't just go and make something. You have to make it in the brain first. It has to happen in the mind first.
Most certainly. Creation is,
when you create up here, then it manifests out here. I'll give you an example. I was building a new center and several years ago. And then I walked into the center and I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I've been here before. But I couldn't because it's the first time we opened. I guess when I was talking to the architects and things, my subconscious was leaking things out. I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, this is exactly the way I saw it in my brain. And I was like, this can't be. I was like, I'm like, it's like so close. I was like, I've been here before. So when you go somewhere in the mind, you'll eventually go there in the body. But too many people think that this is all nonsense. This is all not medically approved. And although it doesn't have any validity on paper, a lot of people have become successful by changing their mind. I go to meditation every day. I'm also a graduate of the Silva Method and the Ultra Silva Method. Now, that's not something that you're going to take and you're going to learn it overnight. But when you realize, and this gets deep, we have our alpha, beta, and theta, right?
Right.
So right now, we are all beta. We are all awake, beta. We're all in our conscious, but we're awake, beta. We're all, you know, we're thinking, okay? But we're not able to make change at this level, beta. So if we were to think right now of basically going down to alpha, that's going to get our brain to function at 10 beats per second, roughly 10 beats, our heart, 10 beats, brain, 10 beats. But then if we go a little bit lower, theta, and we get down to, let's say, 15 or 20, you see, we actually can create at alpha. But if the brain gets active and we're at alpha and then we try to go up, we're going to be at beta and we're going to be awake. And that's not going to work. So we have to get down to theta and then we come up a little bit. So we're active and now we're in alpha. Now we're a perfect way to create. So,
just a different way to explain that. And I love your explanations here. As a practitioner, I am always looking for better ways to explain difficult concepts. And your description of what you might call intention, there can be no iPhone. I have an iPhone in my lap until somebody, right where you are, until somebody envisions that in their head and that becomes a target. Once you have that target in your head, then you can go out in real life and start pulling the jigsaw puzzle pieces together that eventually will be an iPhone. But you do have to first create in your head. And you know, John, I find that that's the biggest problem. We talk to people who've been through all kinds of trauma and tragedy and difficult circumstances, and I find that that is the biggest difference between the people that move forward and are successful and to those that keep sabotaging themselves, is you can never see beyond what we call your own cognitive distortions. You can never see beyond your own stinking thinking. In order to see that goal the brass ring or the end of the rainbow or whatever, a successful business, you have to be able to see beyond your own distorted thinking. And guys, you know, John is right. That's the difference between internal locus of control and external locus of control. What I hear from a lot of people is a bunch of can'ts, and I have a fellow clinician that says, all you got to do is drop two characters and it turns it into a can. Drop the apostrophe T and it becomes a can. And as another person says, everything is impossible until you do it.
The word impossible could not exist without the word possible in it.
Correct. Very correct.
So yes. Yeah, so impossible, really, if you take it apart, means I am possible.
That's cool. You guys should write that down. You can replay the episode and write that down. I want to go back to something John said. John's a little bit generous when he talks about the conscious and subconscious. He said 98. I typically say 98.7. We're pretty darn close. But think about that. Think about that, guys. You're only aware of, if you take my number, 1.3% of all that's going on in your life. 1.3%. Okay. Now, let's apply that to the lady that he talked to and helped her design a new way of thinking so that she can design a new life. She had no idea everything she was doing, but all of it started in the same place, and that's believing that it could happen. That is developing a target of what she wanted, and then here's the magic sauce, if there's a magic sauce. Once you create the target and you fully believe in your capability of tackling that target, then all those other little pieces go to work trying to come up with ways to accomplish that target, and you don't even know. There's so much of what you do, and John pointed out a few of those. When you're walking, you're not aware of all the mechanics of walking. When you touch your nose, you're not really aware of all the, it's called proprioception, by the way, your sense of your body and space, of all the mechanics that have to go into. And those of you watching on video, I'm listening and not watching on video, I'm touching my nose, and I'm actually pretty good at it. And I've had my nose in the same space for my whole life. But there's a lot of mechanics that goes into that. And John, feel free to jump in and correct me if I'm off base with what you're saying. What John's saying is you can create those mechanics in your brain by what you decide to tell yourself. You just got to be careful about what you tell yourself. What are some things that you teach people to tell themselves? I love your mantra. What was it again? If you can say it.
I'm wired to win.
Wired to win. Wired to win. That's catchy. You guys can steal that. I'm sure John wouldn't care. And I think I'll steal it too. I'm wired to win because that starts out your whole day.
Now, if you feel like, so again, we're covering a lot of things here and hopefully Doctor will invite me back for more. But basically there are three learning modalities in our body: kinesthetic, visual, and auditory. Kinesthetic, what I touch, what I sense. Okay. Visual, what I see. And auditory, what I hear. So maybe you're not a visual person in learning. Maybe you're more of a touch person. So maybe get a piece of wire. Put the words, I'm wired to win, and put that piece of wire by your bedpost. And guess what? Maybe that will electrify you. What do you think about that, Doctor?
I love that. That is so fantastic because we create either castles or dungeons in our mind. And
I love
it. Our life follows suit. And I see so many people that they're still in the dungeon. They're just full of this works for you, John. This works for you, Doc Heath. This will never work for me. And they literally are imprisoned by their own belief system. I mean, do you find a lot of that?
For full show notes and transcript of today's episode, go to therapybites.podbean.com.
The Therapy Bites podcast is HIPAA compliant. No identifying patient information will be disclosed by Therapy Bites podcast hosts or Therapy Bites podcast guests without permission from patients or guardians. All personal stories are de-identified in order to comply with HIPAA, the NASW Code of Ethics, and the ethical principles of psychologists and code of conduct. Fresh from the therapy couch and from the deep dark recesses, stories may involve exploding preconceived notions and topics uncomfortable to underthinkers and small farm animals. Audience discretion and duct taping your head for safety is advised. Concrete-headed Kool-Aid drinking humans assume all risks associated with any possibility of choking to death on the accurate, realistic thoughts presented in the Art Lab. This is natural selection, and Therapy Bites podcast management and hosts are not responsible.
Welcome to this episode of Fresh from the Therapy Couch, where we share stories of hurting, helping, and healing. Real life stories from real life humans, hoping their message can be a message you'll use to improve your own lives and possibly maneuver around the mistakes they made. I'd say my phone is a minefield of reminders, but that would be catastrophizing, wouldn't it? My phone is not a minefield because it doesn't blow up and it does make noises, but it's never blown up or there's never been an explosion. Smartphone users, however, will understand that it's a great idea to be smarter than your device, and a great place to start, T-ballers, is reducing what I call applash, APPLASH. Applash is a term that I've coined to, and I'm charging 5 cents to anyone who uses it. No, I'm just kidding. Go out there and use it and make yourself healthier. To point out how we've become subject to constant southbound head jerking at the sound of our phones. Here's a T-ball tip. Turn off all but the most important notifications, such as from your own children and your spouse. Most phones allow you to designate certain folks as VIP with VIP status, so their alerts always get through to you, even in the middle of the night. Reducing applash will quickly improve your brain health. Try it out, see how it works for you, and let us know about your success. We always love hearing from our T-ball team members. Now back to the episode.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab, bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-ball team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
Welcome to the Therapy Bites Art Lab Library, where we have pored over thousands of volumes to bring you the latest Couch Crumbs quilt. Oh, would you like a napkin? You're getting crumbs in the book.
That okay. Me eat book.
Oh. And now today's Couch Crumbs quote.
Thoughts fuel motivation. Motivation drives discipline. A quote by Dr. Heath.
Oh, you got crumbs on the couch. Extra points for you.
Live the art life. Become a T-Ball teammate, inner circle supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/therapybites.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Absolutely, and I have two stories I'm going to share with you. One quick one, I'll tell you of a personal example of this working in my life. We had a challenge, I'm not going to tell you what it was, we had a challenge for one of our events, and we were having a problem finding a venue, and I was going somewhere local in my town, and this lady says to me, can you help me? She had a case of wine, and I was delivering like some cookies and stolen to our to an office, and she's like, can you help me? And I said to her, I have to carry this. Oh, well, I can carry your little stolen and your cookies. Can you help me with this case of wine? So I do. She comes up to me. I don't know this lady from Adam, doctor. Just, oh my gosh. She's like, I can't believe it's you. And I'm looking at her. It's like, she's like, I've been following you online for 3 months. She's like, you're everywhere. I said, who are you? She told me her name and this and that. She's like, I follow you here or there. I said, oh my gosh. I was like, she's like, I love your stuff. I said, I have a challenge. I don't know if you can help me with this. I said, we're looking for, she told me what she does and where she owns. And she owns this big restaurant not too far from us. And I said, I don't know if you can help. I'm just wondering if you might be open to allowing us to put an event on in your place, like reasonable, like not like a lot of money. She's like, oh my gosh. She's like, yes, we would do that. So I'm talking to her and we literally made a deal for our event on a handshake. And so I didn't know how that was going to happen, but the universe put us together. I believe that that was not just a coincidence. There are no coincidences, Doctor, and you probably will agree with me on that, I think. There are no coincidences in life. You and I didn't connect on a coincidence. And people watching the show are not here by coincidence. They're here for a fate, for a purpose. So there was a, let's say, a political figure. And the person didn't really connect with me very well, but I'm always cordial with everybody. They had their EGO. We know those EGO letters, the letters that are trying to get us into trouble. So he had those big letters above his head. He wanted to have me over to talk to me, and he's always nasty to me. So he called me up, and he says, "When can I meet with you?" I said, he's calling me on Friday. I said, "Well, I have a availability on Tuesday at 8 or next Thursday at 4. He's like, "That's the soonest?" I said, "That's the soonest. I guess we'll take Tuesday at 8. So I made him wait for me. I went down there. He said to me, "John," he says, "when are you going to give up with all this nonsense?" So what do you mean? "When are you going to give up with the chamber? When are you going to give up with everything you're doing? Because we don't need all that." And he said, "Oh, by the way, the concept you designed for our shop local." I said, "Yes." He says, "It's good. We're using it and you're not." I said, "Well, can we help you launch it?" "No, we have many more resources than you do. And, you know, we're much bigger than you." "Okay, no problem." So I'm sitting in his chair. He said, "When are you going to stop this foolishness and just, you know, give up with all this nonsense?" So I sit in the chair, his chair, and I sit back and I close my eyes for a few minutes. He goes, "What the heck are you doing?" I said, "Just give me a second, sir. I don't want to lie to you. I want to give you the exact year, the exact month, the exact hour, day, minute, second, microsecond. I'm officially going to give up. Just give me a second." "Oh, I got it." And he's like all excited. And he says to me, I said, "I'm going to give up, sir." And he's like, "Oh, I got him. I'm winning." When a little baby boy or a little baby girl, and he's giving me funny faces, don't want to walk anymore.
Oh, boy.
He looks at me with all these funny faces. And remember, the first person that talks loses. You have to remember that. So I shut up. He comes to me. He goes, "What the heck is that?" I said, "Let me ask you a question. You have two kids, right? A boy and a girl. A girl who just finished college and a boy that's just going in your freshman year of college, right?" "Yes." "Let me ask you this. Do they both walk?" "Yes." "Okay, let me ask you another question. When did they ever tell you they don't want to walk anymore?" He's giving all kinds of crazy funny faces and sits back. A couple minutes, I don't say anything. "Never." I said, "You know, sir, I always knew that when I met you several years ago, that you were a bright and intelligent man. And today, that when I asked you that question the first time, you would give me the exact correct answer the first time. And you're right. The answer is never."
"Never."
He goes, "John, you're arrogant. Now get the blank out of my office."
"Oh, no."
So I share this to you for a reason. I share this to you because, see, everyone in life, and you probably will agree with me, they all want to be liked, right? They all want to do things because, right, they want to be accepted in life, right? What I want to tell you is that, you see, if everyone accepts you in life, you're not living the best life. You see, if you don't have a few people that are kind of not angry with you, but they're kind of a little bit like on the fence about you, you're not bringing your A game to life. And if you don't bring your A game to life, someone else will, and they will replace you. Therefore, I know that if I don't get people that are a little bit curious about me, I got to step it up a notch. Like Emerald said, kick it up a notch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I tell people, if you never run into opposition, you better check your direction. You're headed the wrong way. If you're doing everything that is meaningful to you in your life and taking risk and accepting challenges, you're going to run into opposition. And let me just respond to what John said earlier about destined to meet and everything. I was looking forward to our conversation. I saw some things that John was doing, and I just wanted to reach out and make contact. But let me put a different spin on that for our listeners. And I'm going to steal this from Alfred Deming, a world-famous management consultant. Every life is perfectly engineered to get the results that it gets. Every life is perfectly engineered to get the results that it gets. All we have to ask is, how are we engineering our life? Now, Deming talked about that when he talked about organizations. He said every organization is engineered to get the results it gets. And that's not the exact quote, but it's pretty close. But that gets back to the programming that John and I were talking about. And I think in our culture, John, it's a pretty big hurdle, at least it has been for me, to convince people that they can actually engineer their brain for success or failure. Because
you're 100% right.
Yeah. That's the biggest pushback I get, because people want to talk about their history. And that's fine. I'll talk about history. We do assessments that relate to people's childhood. And as you pointed out, those things do impact us. But it's my belief in our teaching in the art lab that at some point you have to decide what to do with that information. Are you going to let something that happened to you when you were 3, 7, 13, 17 adversely affect your whole life, or are you going to use that as a stepping stone to success? And I think that any experience, no matter how difficult, can actually be used as a stepping stone towards success. What are your
100%,
thoughts?
100%. That comes from the analogy of, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit further. People don't want change in their life. They're afraid of what it means. Am I not going to be able to handle it? Am I not going to adapt to it? And some people are lazy. Some people like to be comfortable. I like to be comfortable being uncomfortable. So I keep pushing my bar a little bit further because I believe, doctor, I can always get better.
I completely agree. And I think that there's value in discomfort, and I engineer discomfort in my own life. I routinely tell patients and folks that I coach, I do a lot of life coaching, and then I do clinical work. I do both. But I tell folks that imagine going into a gym and there's a long rack of dumbbells. And on one end are the 2.5 or 3 pound dumbbells. And on one end are the big, heavy, I don't know, whatever weight comes to mind, 45, 50, 60 pound dumbbells on up to whatever. Which of those do you think will make you stronger? Well, the heavier the weight, the stronger you get. The lighter the weight, the weaker you get. Your body will adapt to the lightest thing that you expose yourself to, the lightest weight that you pick up. And likewise, your mind, and I'm pointing to my brain right here, which is kind of the software of your brain, your mind will adapt to the lightest challenge that you present it with. And if you want to go through life presenting it with whatever it takes to have no opposition, well, you will sink to that level. If you want to level up, give yourself hard stuff to do. Give yourself hard stuff to do. Well, what do you find are, other than what we've already talked about, some of people's biggest hurdles to success in life? And that doesn't have to be just business, but relationships and family and tackling tragedy and trauma.
I got a couple. So one is when we think about people and, you know, what they're doing, and we talk about pushing the envelope far, people don't want to necessarily make the change because they're uncomfortable. But a way that you can be a little bit uncomfortable but not feel overwhelmed is to chunk it. Now, we've learned from many masters of time that to store a phone number, we chunk it. To store a credit card number, we chunk it in bits. So why don't we do that with our goals and celebrate those small mini victories? So if I'm looking to become, I don't know, a person that's an expert at building a home, well, maybe I should start building a small one first. Or if I'm looking to become a good chef, maybe I should make something small first and celebrate that small victory.
That, you know, that is so excellent. I run into folks that they expect a home run. It's their first time at bat, and they expect to hit a home run, and they ignore the value of base hits or walks. And I think that there's much more value in taking a base hit or taking a walk, just whatever it takes to get a hit. Even if it's taking 3 steps forward, 2 steps back over time, that's a lot of steps progress. Stop looking for the home run and celebrate small successes. By the way, I don't know if John realizes he's talking about a very powerful psychological concept here. It's called shaping. And the technical definition of shaping is the successive rewarding of approximations to the desired goal. Anytime you're headed in the right direction toward your target, find a way to reinforce yourself for doing that. It's okay to pat yourself on the back. If it's cleaning out a room or cleaning out the house, stop worrying about cleaning out the house and clean out one drawer.
Yep.
And that one drawer will turn into one room. And over time, that'll turn into the whole house. If it's exercise, you don't got to get up and go work out at the gym for two or three freaking hours. I would heavily recommend against that as a former personal trainer. A little bit of insight into what I do. I will work out for 15 minutes. Well, good grief, there's people on the planet that can hold their breath for 15 minutes. Now, I can't do that, but I can work out for 15 minutes. Stop trying to eat the whole elephant in one single bite and just take small steps. And then tell yourself it's okay to do that. You can set that goal with what John talked about, wired for success first thing in the morning, instead of saying to yourself, oh my gosh, another day, come up with a catchy reinforcer of how am I going to frame, and I'm doing the little framing thing and airframe thing here for our listeners. How are you going to frame your day? Because that really will frame your day. What are some of your other top tips? I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
Oh, no problem. So first thing about the drawer. So if you maybe give yourself a candy bar, take yourself to the movie, do something, but not just for the drawer, but maybe for the room, you'll get a candy bar or you'll go to dinner or something like that. So the other thing I'd like to share with you, I only learned a few years ago. So we're always learning, right? I always say, if you're not learning, you're dying. a gentleman, maybe almost 9 years old, 3 or 4 years ago, taught me something. And I was reluctant to accept it because it didn't seem like it was relevant. But about, I'm going to say maybe a year ago, I started to accept it in my life. It's the word goodbye. Have you ever heard of that, doctor?
The word goodbye. I've heard it many times.
All right. So the word goodbye, and I did a whole week show on this. For those of you who know, I also have a show called Inspirations for Your Life, which is a live show every week. And I talked about the word goodbye as a master topic. So I talked about where it came from, how it started. But goodbye, we always say goodbye to people as a cordial, like we're going to miss them or we're going to see them the next day. We have different ways to say goodbye. But the other thing we don't realize is goodbye is a tool that we can use to have a better life. Now, what the heck is he talking about? All right. So you got a friend of yours, and the friend of yours is supposed to hang out with you. But maybe, I don't know, they're not doing the right thing or they're busy. And you say, okay, no problem, no sweat. We'll do it another time. Another time comes. Same thing. Say, look, I know you're busy. If you don't want to hang out with me, it's no problem. Just let me know up front. Maybe a third time comes. And they say, no, I'm a business. I say, you know what? It's okay. Goodbye. What do you mean? I'm not going to put up with this. When you decide what you want to do with your life, you need to figure that out. But it's goodbye. And see, when you say goodbye or you tell somebody, look, well, if you do this again, it's going to be goodbye. What do you mean? Well, I'm leaving. I'm not going to hang around. And so when somebody knows that goodbye is happening, they might be willing to change or not. So why do I say this? So let's say you have a customer, a client, and the client wants you to do something. Maybe the client wants to abuse you. Maybe they don't want to pay you what you're worth. Or maybe they just try to get free consulting out of you. So you might do it once or twice. But then if you realize it's starting to take away from who you are and disrespect your value, I say, look, this is the way it's going to be. You always have a challenge with the invoices. I'm sorry to hear that. Just need you to pay this invoice or we're going to need to say goodbye. But what do you mean? Goodbye. I just don't have time for this. All the best to you. Just need to find someone else. And I think people are reluctant to say the word goodbye. When you say the word goodbye in a polite way, I've done this with large contracting teams, people that have brought us in. I mean, we do security for Wall Street. And when I feel they're trying to disrespect me and my team, I was like, well, this is the way it's going to be. This is the way we've agreed upon. This is everything in the agreement. Now you're changing things. We're happy to change things. However, you're expecting us to do everything the way you want it now without us changing the price. And if that's the way you want to do it, I'm going to say goodbye. And they're like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, I'm really busy. Sorry. So that's a word that I think a lot of people don't use in that context. Would you agree?
I do. I think that we have a problem setting boundaries because we think that there's some risk to us if someone doesn't like us or someone doesn't agree with us. And no offense to the people in Minnesota. I have a lot of friends in Minnesota. But there's this whole Minnesota nice thing that pervades our lives where we think that we can't set a boundary. And I think that we should set expectations and agreements and then make and keep agreements. And if someone's not making and keeping agreements, I think you can be kind. I think you can be courteous. I think you can be respectful. But I think you can also set a boundary. And one of those boundaries is, you know, I love you, I like you, I want to be in business with you, but, you know, it doesn't seem like, considering what's going on with you, the timing is right. Check back with me when you kind of get things in order. But, you know, I raised my son with some of these things, and I would say as sure as the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, this will always be this way. I'm not telling you this because I don't love you or I'm trying to make life hard on you, but with me, this is just how it works. It will always work this way because, see, I don't want there to be any confusion. I'd rather tackle that right up front, that this is how it's going to be. But I, when you were saying that, I had another thought, and that is it just doesn't have to be people. It can be things.
Absolutely, yes. That's exactly – I was going to go there. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. we're on the same wavelength.
Things in your life, habits, etc., you need to say goodbye to them. Them being not a person, but being an object, an activity that you partake in or don't partake in. Maybe I'm going to say goodbye to procrastinating. I'm going to say goodbye to insanity. Do you know where I'm going with that, Doctor?
I think I do, but go ahead. I don't want to steal your thunder.
Insanity. Einstein said it a long time ago. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is insanity. People don't get that. They just keep doing like, why do you keep threading the jar that way? Why do you keep saying that? Why do you keep doing that? Well, because it should get better, but it's not going to.
Well, I think a little bit of our audience, a little bit of neuroscience behind that is that, as you've heard on the Art Lab before, the brain is highly patterned. That's a great thing. Our walking, our ambulation is a pattern. How we shave is a pattern. I can do my shaving with my eyes closed. How you operate a vehicle, that's really highly patterned. But that becomes so powerful, but patterns will even be engraved, just like ruts in a gravel road, into our brains. And that is really hard to reverse. What keeps you doing the same thing over and over and over again is not focusing your attention on the question, I think, how well is this serving me in my life and my goals? And if this is not going to serve me, if it's not a stepping stone, well, it's a stumbling block.
You may think of it like this, coming from the computer world. What we do when we get up in the morning, you can think of it as a pattern, or you can think of it like the way computer programs work, an algorithm. You get up in the morning, okay? You either take a shower, you have breakfast. You have that order. Now, I'm going to do another one, which I think is pretty powerful, and I think you'll agree. So have you ever stubbed your toe in life? I bet many of you out there will. If you have, raise your hand, or you can just say,
lots. My hand is up.
So when you stub your toe, or you drop a picture frame, or you break a glass, okay, here is the most important thing to break that pattern or that algorithm. So you break the glass. The first thing that's going to happen, I'm going to tell you the bad story. So a person gets up in the morning, goes to have a stubs a toe on the bed, says a few four little unchosen words, gets over to the kitchen, goes to pour the orange juice, glass breaks, say a few more four choice words, cleans up the glass, pours the milk. Now the milk spills out of the cereal all over the person's pants, and now they're having the breakfast, but now they need to change and then finish getting ready for work because they've already gotten dressed. And now they're late, okay, there's a traffic accident. They get to work. There's a top multi-client that they want to do work with. The appointment was 9 o'clock. They got there 9:30. They didn't call. They didn't explain anything. And the guy said, you know, unfortunately, we have to say goodbye. What do you mean? Well, we thought you were a great fit, but frankly, if this is the way you run your personal life, we're definitely not going to trust you with our company and our business. That happened because of patterns. So the most important thing is that when you do something like stub your toe, drop a frame, a glass. It could be anything that happens to you that you don't like. First thing you do is you could say, cancel, cancel. You say, okay, I broke a glass. No problem. I'm going to clean it up. Today is going to be a great rest of the day. And what it does is it just isolates that. Have you ever been in a car before? Have any of you ever gone over a bump 5 years ago? You ever gone over a bump with a car? Okay. Can you tell me a lot about that bump? Probably not. You went over it and it's done. If that bump didn't have a major impact on your life, like, you know, the bump and you hit a deer or something, you're probably not going to remember that bump, what road, what time. You go over a lot of bumps in life. So that's all it is. It's a bump in the road. I stubbed my toe. It's a bump. Okay. Let me just, my foot will feel fine a little bit. I'm fine. I didn't break anything. Let me go have some breakfast. Oh, I broke a glass. All right. No big deal. I'll just clean it up, pour us another one, have a glass of juice, and the rest of my day is going to be wonderful.
I love that. That's great because it makes no sense to me psychologically to let something that takes maybe 30 seconds, 60 seconds, color or ruin the other 1,439 minutes of the day.
Don't let an incident or a bump in the road spiral your day down into oblivion.
Absolutely. And we have control over that with some of these resources that John has been talking about that you can develop inside the vault of your skull. Now, John, before we run out of time here, and we do need to schedule another interview sometime because we only kind of scratched the surface, but not to put you on the spot, but I do want to ask this, since we've talked about the mechanics of self-improvement, motivation, mechanics of success, power programming your brain, overcoming hurdles, think and dig down deep here. What might be your favorite secret success hack, favorite secret success hack that you could share with our audience today?
T-ballers, time to quit your lollygagging. Get out of the dugout, onto the field, and live the art life.
I have to tell you, it's going to level. It's quieting my brain and creating what I want to see. Using a mental technique, putting the problem out there, putting the solution out there, and then just kind of letting it up to the universe and then letting that. Because my brain's going to keep working on things. That's when we step away from a problem. Our brain's still going to work on that. It's like we put it into an incubator and then we come back. Oh, it's done. I'll take it out. Mm-hmm. Our brain is always working on the problem, even though we may not actively be conscious that it's working on the problem. The more that we understand, there's, without getting too deep, we have synaptic connections right in our brain. So the more that we create synaptic connections, the more intelligent we become, but also the more we have access with those neural pathways to the same data because we have multiple ways to get there. So it just seems like a natural flow. When our life starts to go into a flow, we start to love it. I always tell people, I don't work a day in my life. I get paid to help people. I get paid to live a life that just sort of flows and people reward me by paying me. So I think that's what it is. If you believe that you are loving what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And I don't think any of us should work a day in their life.
Well, and I love that because I would say that that is the result of having found meaning and value in what you're doing for work. If you think that what you're doing is hell on earth, or in a prison of a job, or as I've heard it called, a soul-sucking job, I would challenge you folks to try to find some value and meaning in what you're doing and ask, but wait a minute, is this job not necessary? Does this job in some way not serve people? And then you're going to work a day in your life.
I'll leave you with a quick last thought, real quick. My first job part-time, where I had my IT company, Jay Moore, I wanted to get a few dollars, so I worked for a government agency. I won't tell you which one. I was getting paid pennies for what I'm worth now, pennies. And so they weren't treating me very well, but something kind of broke the camel's back that they still were being disrespectful. I kept, you know, biting my tongue. And so walked into the lady's office. I'll call her Mary. That wasn't her name. This was day or two before Thanksgiving. And I go in there and I said, Mary, I said, can I talk to you? She said, sure, sure. I said, I want to say thank you. Oh, you're welcome. I said, I want to say thank you for helping become a better version of myself and helping you become a better version of myself. She's like, all right. And today is my very last day. She's like, John, what are you doing? You know, you're 3 days from being vested. I said, you know what? that little bit of money is going to be nothing to me. I said, I'll make tons more money than that. And why would I want to be somewhere where people don't actually respect and treat me as the person that I deserve to be? So it's time to move on and create a life that's waiting for me.
Wow, that's an incredible story. You guys can reach out and contact John at his Linktree, John C. Morley, Serial Entrepreneur. And John, what are some other ways they could reach out?
Or really easy, they can just go to my Linktree as a shorty, which is believemeachieve.com, because you have to believe me, achieve. So believemeachieve.com, they can check that out. I'm also offering anyone that wants to attend either I'm offering a free 30-minute session with me, or they can attend one of my free Jason Academy masterclasses. They can go to Orbital Media Events at eventbrite.com, or they can just message me on LinkedIn and say that they saw the show and they would like to have a free 30-minute consultation. I'll send them a link and I can help them with their goal setting. And this offer is valid for the entire month the show airs. So if you see this month, whatever the show airs, it's valid that entire month.
Fantastic. And we'll put that in the show notes, folks, so that you have easy access to it there. And we have one more thing to do that we're going to spring on John that we typically spring on our guests.
We journey now with Doc Heath as he submerges with our special guest into the depths beneath the dark recesses of the therapy couch.
We're going to go deep under the dark recesses of the therapy couch and pull out a question for John and see what he has to say about this. Okay. Let me get myself back on camera here and see what John has to say here about this. With all that you know about success, achievement, programming the mind, if you could pick one celebrity that you think you could help the most, who would that be and how would you help them?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one. No one's coming to my mind directly, but what I could probably tell you is any celebrity that is using other things in their life as outs. It could be drugs. It could be procrastination. Something where they're using that to actually make themselves feel whole. I believe I could make them feel they are already whole. And that would in turn get them to realize that they can slowly wean themselves off of whatever that attitude, behavior, or procrastination is, and just show them love. And that is really all they need to be, because if they can love themselves first, then other people will love them. But if they don't love themselves, they're never going to have a fan in the world that's going to like them.
That is so very true. You can never fill a deep hole in your life with drugs or alcohol or even money or possessions. Status or fame, I think you're best filling it with meaning and purpose in your life. John, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a blast. Look forward to having you back sometime. And thank you, T-Ballers, for joining us today. Catch the next episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab. And have a great holiday season for yourself. And if that's already passed by the time this is aired, make it a great new year. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Thank you, Dr. Heath. Wish you all a very happy, healthy, prosperous, abundant 2023.
Hey, thank you so much.
Guest analyst Dr. Jung A. Tart reporting for Art Lab Psychological Couch Duty for Dr. Freudnot, on sabbatical, being psycho-vacationalized. Serial success artist John Morley's PMS performance places him in the 97th percentile on the PMS's KSS, Keller Success Scale. This indicates a stratospherically high degree of atmospheric ascendancy in Mr. Morley's cortical crevices and a top-notch tendency toward audacious courageousness. Overall, Mr. John Morley's PMS psychosillimetric assessment results present a picture of an individual dangerously directed against defeat, targeting his talents toward towering triumph. This success-centered soul likely has a prolonged prognosis of valorous victory in the near future until the indomitable, imperturbable features of his psyche have been psychomologically analyzed and exorcised. It is my considered conclusion that CEO of Success John Morley be prescribed no less than a 302 milligram SN subneuronal dose of J. Moore et al.,
und a 2300 milligram ID intradentritical dose of PRN successoril to curtail confabulating cognitions. Dr. Jung et al. Guest Shrinkstigator, Therapy Bites, Art Lab.
Grab some of this episode's guest merchandise, specially designed to help keep this episode's message top of mind in your life. Don't forget friends and family members who could use an Art Lab mental boost too. Just go to therapybites.myshopify.com.
Hey, T-Ballers, thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team. Next time on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Ballers, welcome back to another great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab. I have a question for you. What happens to a person if they run behind a car? Anybody? They get exhausted. You get it? I know, it's a silly joke. Are you running on fumes? Well, I have another question for you. What are you usually doing at 6:30 a.m.? Oh, I know. You've already laced up your tennis shoes, and you're halfway through your daily 6 a.m. 6-mile run, right? No? Well, maybe you should be. Maybe you all should be. And today we're talking the mental health benefits of running and how your life and longevity may actually depend upon it. Listen up, because Mark and Hamani, our special guests today, Hami Mahani and Mark Passant, are here to talk to us about transforming those fumes into fuel. Next up on Therapy Bites Art Lab. Join us.
Government legal gobbledygook. Therapy Bites is not intended as a diagnostic or as an alternative to professional clinical treatment. Resources and advice are for information and entertainment purposes only. Brought to you by... Someone saying things you don't like? Tape that nagging loudmouth shut. Government-approved speech tape. Gas tape. Now available at your local hardware store. Therapy Bites Art Lab is not an approved, endorsed, authorized, butt-kissing affiliate of the United States Special Offense Assessment Police. SOAP for short. Warning. Consumption of Therapy Bites Art Lab content by Kool-Aid drinking, stinking, thinking, social media, pseudo-psychological pushing, wacky woke, anti-free speech, mumbo-jumbo advocates may cause spontaneous internal skull combustion, stomach discomfort, and or laxative effects. Allergy warning. Therapy Bites is manufactured in a facility that challenges nutty distortions, processes nuggets of accurate, realistic thinking, and life-affirming beliefs. This is the audio version of the legal fine print. Why are you still listening to this when you can catch the next great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with a good friend or family member? Really? Are you still there? This is getting silly. Move on to the next psychologically thrilling episode of the best advice on the net. No copay required.
Me eat copay.
Yeah, with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. Go ahead. Don't be podgoraphobic. Scoot, scoot, scoot. On to the next episode.